But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against such there is no law. We continue our series, Sunday morning series, in Paul's letter to the Galatian churches. Now, last week, were you listening? The passage we studied, verse 13 to 21 of chapter 5, is quite extraordinary. And if you've forgotten what we said, then please do get the CD, or if you weren't here, get the CD. Understanding verses 13 to 21 is like putting on a new pair of glasses. And through the lens of these verses, we see clearly. So that's why that solid, orthodox, Bible-reformed church is so joyless and cranky and utterly unattractive. And so that's why that not quite so orthodox church, which sometimes has all sorts of nonsense going on in its services, is so warm and loving and united. Because this church is looking somewhere where the other church has stopped looking. And where is that? Well, they're looking to Jesus. And because Christ is the heartbeat of that church, because there are people who glory in the cross, because they revel in a crucified Christ, they walk in the Spirit and therefore do not fulfill the desires of the flesh. Verses 13 to 21 is almost counterintuitive. How do you make believers holy? How do you sanctify them? By preaching the law? Wrong. By following the rule book? Wrong. By doing holy things? Wrong. By trying harder? Wrong. A friend of mine pastored a church, and every week he told them, you must be more spiritual. You must be more holy. You're not making an effort. And to his dismay, the more he preached these things, the less they responded. And the less they responded, the more he preached these things. In effect, the harder he whipped them. Suffice to say that now pastor and people have parted company. Were they a lazy, unspiritual lot? No. But he was preaching the wrong message in the wrong spirit. You can't make people holy by getting them to do holy things. If you tell people to keep the rules, there's the law, now go and do it. And if you're not doing it, it's because you're not trying hard enough. You're not spiritual enough. Well, what resources do they call upon? They call upon the bankrupt resources of their corrupt existence, they call upon the flesh. And so you don't get a holy life. You get the works of the flesh. Now the works of the flesh are evident, which are, and Paul goes on with that big long list. No, you don't do that. What you do is you preach Christ and his cross. And you keep bringing the people again and again to Jesus. And as they look to him, as they glory in his cross, so they are led by the Spirit of God. That's how Christians are sanctified. Christian friend, if the dominant force in your life is the Spirit of God, you won't be following the rule book with the spirit of a slave. No, but neither will you be doing those things which the rules forbid. But you'll be climbing so much higher and actually fulfilling the real intention of the law. By the Spirit, by a power greater than the flesh, you're able to live a life of true holiness and love. Christian friends, when we're led by the Spirit, when we live as sons, our capacity for pleasing our Father in heaven, for doing his will, is real and dynamic. We really do live to the glory of God. Do you understand that? You don't get holy people by doing holy things. It's looking to Christ. And as you do, you'll walk in the Spirit. Okay, now all that's by way of reminder. Paul, of course, doesn't stop at verse 21, does he? Because now he goes on to describe just what a spirit-filled, spirit-led life looks like. Now, what grows out of the soil of the human heart? Well, it's the thorns and thistles of the works of the flesh. But when I'm united to Jesus, when I'm indwelt by his Spirit, my life yields a very different crop. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against such there is no law. So this morning we're just going to look at verses 22 to 25, just a small portion today, and we'll divide our time into two. So number one, the fruit of the Spirit. Now we're barely scratching the surface. The fruit of the Spirit is love. Well, what sort of love? Well, come with me to John chapter 13. And verse 34. Jesus speaking to his disciples, he says, John 13 verse 34, a new commandment I give to you, that you love one another. As I have loved you, that you also love one another. By this, all will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another. Now, why does Jesus call it a new commandment? Because never before have we seen love like this. Never before have we encountered the full dimensions of Christ's love. And as he has loved us, so says Jesus, we are to love one another. Impossible? The fruit of the Spirit is love. So how does Jesus love his disciples? Well, a few verses before in chapter 13, what do we see him do? Think of it, he's a 33-year-old man. And we see him kneeling down and washing the dirty, sweaty, flaky feet of his disciples. And having cleaned from the toes the dust and the donkey dung, he then dries them. Now, not even Jewish slaves were expected to wash feet. But the Lord of glory washes the feet of sinners. And he says, follow me. So, Christian friend, are you prepared to be the slave of all? Are you prepared to do what no one else is prepared to do? To refresh and to revive your brothers and sisters. That's what washing feet is, isn't it? If you wash the feet, the whole of you is revived. Are you prepared to wash the feet of brothers and sisters? The fruit of the Spirit is love. But Jesus' capacity to love goes further still, because from the upper room we move to the crucible of Gethsemane, where we read that Jesus is in agony. Why? Abba, Father, all things are possible for you. Take this cup away from me. What cup? Well, it's the cup of God's wrath. It is outpoured judgment upon the sinner. And Jesus says, Father, anything but this. It's the ultimate nightmare. It's the one thing that Jesus fears. It is to be cut off. It is to be put to grief by Abba, Father. He had every reason to say no. But does he? On the contrary, he denies every instinct. He does that which seems contrary to his nature. And he embraces that which he fears most, to save the people he loves. He had every reason to say no, but he says yes. His fingers tighten round the cup, don't they? Nevertheless, not what I will, but what you will. That you love one another as I have loved you. Christian friend, are you prepared to deny every instinct to actually do, yes, what's contrary to your nature. It's not you to do something like that. That you may demonstrate your love for God's people. Or do you say, ah, yeah, but that's not me. I don't do that. Or maybe you say, well, I'm prepared to do anything, just not that. The fruit of the Spirit is love. But Jesus' capacity to love goes further still, doesn't it? Because we move from Gethsemane to Golgotha, where we see the greatest love of all. What does he do? He lays down his life for the unlovable and the unlovely, for the chief of sinners. And it's the death that he dies, isn't it? It's the death of the cross. That you love one another as I have loved you. It's a self-denying, a self-forgetting, a self-sacrificing love in which daily I lay down my life for the highest good of others, regardless of the cost to me. Now, the flesh can't do it. The flesh is only one word. Me. What about me? The flesh can't love. But the fruit of the Spirit is love. Now, Christian friends, we're very good, aren't we, at remembering what other people owe to us. We've all got long memories when it comes to that. But ever before you think of what somebody else owes to you, you remember the debt of love that you owe to them. The fruit of the Spirit is love. And the fruit of the Spirit is joy. What's joy doing there? What's joy doing there, number two on the list? What do you mean joy occurs 62 times in the New Testament? What do you mean the word rejoice occurs over 40 times in the New Testament? What have you to be joyful about? And of course, that's how the flesh thinks, isn't it? But Christian friends, filled with the Spirit, we live in this age by the realities of the age to come. Now, if all I had to look forward to was an evening out, or holidays, or shopping trips, then I'd have every reason to be miserable. But Christian friends, we're to be a joyful people. In Christ I'm forgiven. In Christ I cry, Abba, Father. He tells me I'm greatly beloved. And the more unworthy I feel myself to be, the greater the evidence that nothing but divine love could ever have loved a wretch like me. And to crown it all, I can say, Jesus is mine. Why should he run to meet a prodigal like me? As Andrew Bonar says, would it have been right for the prodigal to sit at the table, dropping tears into his cup, saying, I can't be glad, when the Father said, it is right that we should make merry and be glad. The fruit of the Spirit is joy. Moving on. The fruit of the Spirit is peace. Paul writes this to the Romans. He says, therefore, having been justified by faith, we have peace with God through our Lord Jesus Christ. Christian friends, peace with God. Do you think that peace is unfelt? John Lennon wrote a song called How Do You Sleep? And in the song he attacked his old Beatle partner, Paul McCartney. And each verse of the song closes with the words, How do you sleep at night? Implication, Paul McCartney, after what you've done, how can you lie down in peace? How can you sleep at night? Well, Christian friends, how do you sleep at night? After what you've done? After the person that you are? How do you sleep at night? How? Well, the fruit of the Spirit is peace. He assures me of sins forgiven. That if tonight I died, I would open my eyes to see my beloved's face. Indeed, I would awake in his likeness. How do you sleep at night? Well, if my Lord really is in control, if my God is big enough to make sure that everything that happens is according to his plan, if my Father really is working all things together for my good, then I can sleep. Let the unbeliever worry. I'd be worrying if I was an unbeliever. But I sleep with the calm of a child cradled in his father's perfect care. I can go to my bed in peace. The fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering. What's long-suffering? Well, it's to suffer long, isn't it? It's to suffer long without getting even. Now, I don't expect much from the world, which is why when the world is unpleasant to me, I tend to put up with it. It's the way it is, isn't it? We don't expect much from the world. But what of believers? What are those believers who are prickly and awkward and hurtful and who are oversensitive and who are insensitive, who seize on your words and actions and think the worst? Those believers who point out the speck in your eye, that's infuriating, isn't it? Because they can't see the plank in their own eye. Those believers who keep a record of wrongs, who excuse themselves, but never you. And those believers who just talk and talk and talk, but they never listen to you. And they want you to see their need, but they're entirely blind to yours. And those believers who trample through your life with big, heavy, dirty boots and say it was for your good. Those people you think you've got it all sorted out with and everything's fine, only for it then to start all over again. And you put yourselves out for them, and they never seem to put themselves out for you. And the more that you love them, the less they seem to love you. And what happens, Christian friend? What happens in the church? You get hurt, don't you? And it does hurt. And it isn't fair. So what do you do? Well, we know what the flesh does. The flesh strikes back. It gives as good as it gets, doesn't it? We're told, verse 20, hatred, contentions, jealousies, outbursts of wrath, dissensions, murders. That's what the flesh does. It strikes back. It says, you don't treat me like that. Christian friends, is that what you do? So there are people in this church that you ignore. There are people in this church that you complain to, or you complain about, to others. Are there people that you blame? And maybe you pulled up the drawbridge and you've opted out. You tried to help them, you got hurt, and you said never again. And you're retreating from church life. Are there people and you're waiting for your revenge? You've kept a record of wrongs going back for years. And as far as you're concerned, it's God's will that they should be pulled down a peg or two. And maybe you're God's instrument to do it. Well, that just sounds like the flesh, doesn't it? Because the fruit of the Spirit is what? What is it? It's long-suffering, isn't it? It means we suffer long. We're hurt. And we're hurt, and we're hurt again. Without taking offense, without striking back, without getting even. And of course it's unfair. But that's what long-suffering's about, isn't it? Is God long-suffering towards you? Then what's the God-like thing to do? We freely forgive. If there's any condemning to be done, we leave the condemning to God. And taking offense and raising myself up on my dignity and say, you're not going to treat me like that, that is a choice that we refuse. You can't Whether you get hurt or not, you can't stop yourself from getting hurt, can you? That just happens. But what I do next is a choice I deliberately make. Getting hurt and taking offense are two different things. If I get hurt, I deliberately make the choice not to take offense. Long-suffering. What about me? That's the language of the flesh. When you look at a letters page, which letter do you read first? Well, I always go to the shortest letter. Here's a short letter from Charles Spurgeon. Okay? For someone who's suffering long. He says, bear, bear, bear. Forbear, forbear, forbear. In yielding is victory. Fight the devil and love the brother. Love him until he is lovable. And that's our responsibility this morning, isn't it? To love our brothers and sisters, however unlovable they may be. Love them till they're lovable. Long-suffering. Next one on our list, kindness. Just turn with me to Luke chapter 6. It's the words of our Lord. Luke chapter 6 and verse 35. Kindness. This is what Jesus says, verse 35 of Luke 6. But love your enemies. Do good. And lend, hoping for nothing in return. And your reward will be great. And you will be sons of the Most High. For he is kind to the unthankful and evil. So to be kind is to be godlike. And to be kind, therefore, is to be generous. Is God kind only to the thankful? No. He's kind to the unthankful, isn't he? So don't be put off showing kindness, being kind to the ungrateful. Is God kind only to the good? No, he's kind to those who are evil. So don't be kind only to those who are going to be kind back to you. Kindness we show to the undeserving. Kindness doesn't have favourites. And kindness is considerate. When it sees a need, it doesn't wait to be asked. Do you? And it's warm-hearted. When it sees a need, it refuses to walk on by. Do you? And kindness is self-forgetting. When it sees a need, it puts itself out. It doesn't leave it to somebody else. Do you? Just imagine a spirit-led church flourishing with this fruit of kindness. Think of it. You have ears that are always ready to hear and to listen. You have eyes that aren't just seeing, but they're looking round to see where I can show kindness. Tongues that are trained and taught to be kind. Hands that reach out. Feet that run swiftly to help. Homes that are open, warm, welcoming, hospitable. It'd be a church, wouldn't it, where every bruised reed and every smoking flax would be safe. And no one would be ignored. Nobody would be ignored. Nobody would be left on the outside. There'd be continually drawing of people in because kind actions draw people in. And in a kind church, there's attention to detail. It doesn't just see the big things that need doing. Kind people notice the little things. Kindness. And going back to our list. Verse 22. The fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, kindness. The next on the list is goodness. Now time is short. It's moving on. Goodness. What's goodness? Well, I've used this illustration before. I'm going to use it again. The children's cartoons, SpongeBob SquarePants. Yep. One episode I particularly like, I've watched it a few times, Grandma's Kisses. And SpongeBob, he gets a hand-knitted jumper from his grandmother. And as he hugs it, he says, ooh, a jumper. with love in every stitch. Christian friend, in all that you do, you are to put love in every stitch. So much so that people can feel it and hug it. That's what goodness means. Love in every stitch. Faithfulness. Now, calling all teens and 20s and 30s, faithfulness. If you're given a responsibility, do you see it through? If you're given a responsibility, a commitment, is it safe with you? Can we rely upon you? Will you be there on time? Do you have to be asked only once, and once is enough, and it's done? And is your faithfulness seen at the prayer meeting? Now, let's be honest. There are some things that you'd never miss, would you? You'd never miss. It's etched into your weekly timetable. You're going to be there. Never miss it. Is that same faithfulness to that shown to something of far greater importance? The prayer life of the church, is it? When were you last at the Wednesday prayer meeting? What if God always had more important things to do? What if God was too busy? What if God kept forgetting? Faithfulness is a God-like quality. In this church, are you known for your faithfulness? Or does everyone have to take the second thought, think, no, if it goes with them, nothing will happen? Gentleness. Gentleness. We love gentleness, don't we? And it's that personal quality to which Jesus draws our particular attention to in himself. And what he says, come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light. What Jesus says of himself there is unique. He draws our particular attention to a personal quality unlike any of his other qualities. He wants to tell us something about himself, which he doesn't say in any other way about any other quality. He says what? I am gentle. As we come to him, he wants us to know that above all other things, he is gentle. He's not rough with the sinner. It's wonderful, isn't it? He's the infinite Son of God. And as we behold the unutterable glory, and as we step forward, what's the touching point? The meeting point, the touching point is his gentleness. So Christian friends, when weary, worn, and sad people come to me, what do they find is the touching point? Am I gentle? Am I warm, approachable, friendly? Or am I assertive and bossy with a smart aleck put down? Gentleness, my strength is under control. Maybe that's why, Christian friends, some people never come to you a second time. Gentleness, and the last of this is self-control. Now look at the works of the flesh. What does it say? They're obvious, as Paul says. They're adultery, fornication, uncleanness, lewdness, idolatry, sorcery, hatred, contentions, jealousies, outbursts of wrath, selfish ambitions, dissensions, heresies, envy, murders, drunkenness, revelries, and the like. The works of the flesh are the very opposite to self-control. Yeah? People can't stop themselves, can they? They say, well, I couldn't help it. I was under pressure. How else was I supposed to react? Now, a horse can trample you to death, or it can ride to your rescue. It all depends on who's holding the reins. If the rider is the flesh, then the horse is out of control. But if the reins are in the hands of one who is controlled by the Spirit, then the horse is mastered. So, Christian friend, do you have mastery over your mind, emotions, tongue, appetites? Do you have mastery over yourself? You know, we sometimes think, don't we, if I was filled with the Spirit, witnessing would be so much easier because I'd be uninhibited. Well, actually, on the contrary, if I'm Spirit-filled, how much more careful I would be in my witness. Careful that my words were loving, true, wise, imaginative, self-controlled. So the fruit of the Spirit. And then Paul says this rather enigmatic thing, doesn't he? Verse 23, he says, against such there is no law. What does he mean? Well, can the law legislate for these things? Yeah? Can the law command you to be gentle? Can the law command you to be long-suffering? Can the law, what's written down there, command you to be kind? It can't, can it? It's not the rule book that produces these things, but the Spirit. It's not by keeping the rules that we find these fruit, it's by the Spirit. And as we walk in the Spirit, so actually we fulfill the real intention of the law, which is a life of love and holiness to the glory of God. Well, point number two then, as we wrap these things up. It's an obvious question, isn't it? How then do we cultivate the fruit of the Spirit? And Paul tells us in verses 24 and 25. And those who are Christ's have crucified the flesh with its passions and desires. If we live in the Spirit, let us also walk in the Spirit. Now, Christian friend, why has God put you in this local church? Why has he surrounded you with Christians? Some of those Christians you find it very difficult to get on with. Some of those Christians actually who naturally speaking, you don't really like. You find it difficult to love them. And why has God put that particular person in your life that causes you so much grief? And why does God keep putting you in testing situations where others let you down? And why does God spread before you needs and opportunities and responsibilities? Why? Because if you are Christ's, when these things happen, two things will take place. Number one, the flesh will kick against it. Oh, they let me down again. So what are you going to do about it? They really hurt me. It's not fair. So what are you going to do about it? Not more things I have to do. So what are you going to do about it? You see, the flesh will kick hard. The flesh will take you and it'll pinch you, even to, as it were, bringing blood out of you. The flesh will say, what about me? Doesn't anyone ever think about me? And when the flesh kicks hard and pinches hard, what are you to do? Verse 24, and those who are Christ's have crucified the flesh with its passions and desires. The last thing you do is give to the flesh the kiss of life. Yeah, what about me? Is that what you've been doing? Explains a great deal, doesn't it? Explains all that suppressed anger and jealousy and the feeling that it's not fair. And that somehow justice has got to be done. It's all got to be sorted out here and now. The equation's got to fit now. And that's why you are fed up with so many people and so many situations. Because you've given the flesh the kiss of life. When it cried out, me! You said, oh yes, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that you've been treated like this. I am to be pitiless with the flesh. I am to be pitiless with myself. When the flesh says, what about me? What about you? You're nailed to a cross, and there you will die, and there I will leave you. I have no respect for you, for the flesh. So, Christian friend, don't give the flesh the kiss of life. Those who are Christ have crucified the flesh. You're to be absolutely pitiless. Cruel, if you like. Because that's what crucifixion's about, isn't it? And the flesh might be there for a long, slow, lingering death. But that's where you're going to leave it. And you're not going to bring it down and pamper it and repatriate it. So in those situations in which God has put you, two things will take place. Number one, the flesh will kick against it. So what do? You crucify the flesh. But number two, this situation that you don't like and you wouldn't have chosen, and here you are. What do? It becomes an opportunity, doesn't it? To walk in the Spirit. Verse 25. If we live in the Spirit, let us also walk in the Spirit. And we said this last time. I don't want to repeat it all today. But what is it to walk in the Spirit? Is to look to Jesus. If I'm walking in the Spirit, I won't be thinking about the Spirit. I'll be thinking about Jesus. I won't be thinking, oh, now I feel something. It must be the Spirit that I'm feeling. If I'm walking in the Spirit, I'll be looking to Christ. In a church where they keep in step with the Spirit, it's Christ and His cross that are the heartbeat of that church. And so do you see, now this situation that's causing me grief, what does it become? It becomes an opportunity to walk in the Spirit. It becomes an opportunity to do what? To look to Jesus. Did you notice the fruit of the Spirit? What's it a description of? It's a description of Jesus Christ, isn't it? He is the very embodiment. He is these things fleshed out. He's the very embodiment of love, joy, peace, long-suffering, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Do you see, Jesus now becomes my law. And His example binds me at every point. So when these things happen, I crucify the flesh and I walk in the Spirit. I ask the question, what would Jesus do? And looking to Him, and by the power of His Spirit, I do it. More needs to hassle me. Christians that drive me up the wall. I've been hurt again. No one to help. Oh, it's them again. Don't give the flesh the kiss of life. You ask the question, what would Jesus do? In this situation, wouldn't He love? Wouldn't He be kind? Wouldn't He suffer long? Wouldn't He exercise self-control? And you go through the list, what would Jesus do? Do you see what Paul is saying? See what we're saying this morning? The church, with its trials and tribulations, is God's greenhouse for growing the fruit of the Spirit. So before you complain about this or that, just remember, Christian friend, you prayed for this. You prayed for this situation. You prayed that this person would come and give you trouble. You think, well, no, I didn't. Yes, you did. Because you prayed that God would make you like Jesus. And this is how He answers such prayers.